Okay, let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 33 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, only just because he's heading to Sydney again, Shelton Muller, how are you?
Yes, I'm coming up your way for the Photo Imaging World Expo that is on in Sydney this coming weekend. It's the annual Photo Industry Expo in Australia, so I'm looking forward to that.
So all over by the time our listeners hear this, but
that's right. But and so I'll let you know next week how it went.
Yeah,
but,
it sounds like it's going to be great.
Well, it's going to be interesting because, of course, the photo industry has been hit seriously with a few major fall-offs this year, AGFA and Konica Minolta and people such as that. Yet there are new players in the market that we don't see too often, and that's people like Panasonic and Sony, who haven't been in there in years past, are going to be there this year as they were last. So it's a constantly changing industry. You have to keep changing with it. I'm looking forward to seeing all the new products. I believe there's going to be the announcement of a new brand of SLR, but I'm going to wait before I tell people what that is. That's a digital SLR, and I'm just going to be interested to see where the industry is headed.
Would that be from a respected electronics manufacturer?
A respected electronics manufacturer, yes, absolutely.
I think I might know what you're talking about there.
Yes, okay.
Get out of the bag.
Yeah, so we'll see. I've heard a whisper, I'm going to see if I can get my mitts on one. I believe that they will be there. I'll let you all know next week, but of course it could be all over the internet already and I just haven't done my research. I'm a hands-on guy, so I want to see the thing and play with it. And of course the Australian Institute of Professional Photography has its judging there, so you can sit in and watch as photographers judge the landscape section, the wedding section, the portrait section, commercial, editorial, all these photographic sections that the judges look at. And of course you get your Photographer of the Year award in Australia, and then of course each section has its award winner, Landscape Photographer of the Year, Wedding Photographer of the Year, and it's an interesting thing to sit in and watch the judging, watch the judges, listen to their comments, listen to them agree, disagree. It's all very civilized, and you learn a lot about photography just by sitting there, because these fabulous images come up, and yet there's always something to criticize in a positive way and not in a negative way. And I enjoy the process because you realize where you can improve seriously. In your own work. So I'm really looking forward to being there.
Cool. All right, and what are we going to chat about this week?
Well, I've had a lot of interest on the subject we're going to discuss this week, but before I get into that, let me tell you, Michael, I will be discussing the subject of workflow, so thank you for asking that. And Steve, photographing in public places, you emailed me about that. Yes, it's a tough one. I know that, of course, recently here in Melbourne, we had an issue with a camera club that went out to Geelong to photograph a particular site. It was a power plant, I think, and they were all stopped by security. The whole thing is ridiculous, but I can also understand that people want to be protected. But Steve, we can talk about that more in length. I'll do some research and get back to you. I've had a lot of questions about shooting panoramas, Bruce, as from digital photographers. And so we're going to talk about that at length today. David Elfring, thank you very much for your email. David has a D70 and is thinking of going to film because he wants to do high resolution landscape work to get more detail out of the landscape. Personally, I think your D70 will do a fabulous landscape, and I can vouch for that because my wife has one, and she's done some beautiful work in Peru, and we photographed in Vanuatu together, and the detail is really up to you. But let's talk about the other part of the question that you had, which is about shooting panoramas and some of the techniques that you need to understand if you're going to do a digital panorama, which essentially means taking a series of photographs and stitching them together using software. If you take one photograph and just sort of crop it, well, that's ridiculous, because all you're doing is losing resolution and the thing will never print as well as it should. You can do a very successful digital panorama if you just get a few techniques right under your belt. The subject, of course, is going to be critical. If you're photographing a busy street where people are walking up and down and you're taking a series of photographs, it's not going to work. A seascape will also not work because, of course, you've got moving waves and, you know, that you'll very rarely be able to stitch together. If it's a windy landscape, you're going to also have a problem. So having the subject correct is going to be the first thing. A quiet landscape, you got no trouble. So let's talk about, let's pretend that we're shooting a quiet landscape. Shoot in RAW, that would be my first suggestion, not only because you have a 16-bit image, but also because you can make sure that the white balance is identical in each shot. I would suggest, and you more than suggest, that you set your white balance manually before you take your photographs. But if you don't, you can, of course, change your white balance in RAW, and of course, therefore, all your photographs will have the same color balance. Also, if you shoot in RAW, you don't have any JPEG artifacts when you're putting the photographs together to contend with. Shoot in manual exposure. That's necessary, absolutely necessary, and expose for the part of the scene that is most important to you. If you're doing 3, 4, 5 images and stitching them together, your exposure will vary as you pan across, simply because there's going to be more sky in one part of the scene than in another, or there may be factors, you know, light sources, etc.
The position of the sun is changing.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So shoot manually and expose for that part of the scene that is most important to you, and then keep the exposure the same as you shoot each scene. The choice of lens is important too. The wider the lens, the more distortion you're going to get on the edges, and so the more you have to overlap each particular photograph. Now, that's not a bad thing. But just remember that the wider the lens, you know, the more distortion you're going to get at the edges, and that is going to be very difficult to stitch together. Also, if you're using a wide-angle lens, stop down to reduce vignetting, because if you've got this dark vignette in each frame, you're going to have a hell of a time stitching that together. It also increases depth of field.
So you're saying so, use a narrower aperture?
Yes, you know, stop right down to 16, 22, whatever you can, to prevent vignetting, especially with wide-angle lenses. And of course, it also increases depth of field, so your focus, you know, from foreground to background will be sharp, and you won't have any problem stitching the image together. These are all things you have to think about, because you've got to go into the software and put these pictures together, and they have to, when you've got one part of something that overlaps with another, it has to be, you know, it has to be spot on.
So getting back to focal length, what do you reckon is sort of like the minimum, like you were saying that there's too much distortion with wide angle, so should you not be shooting anything wider than, say, 35mm or 50mm or...?
Look, a lot is going to depend on the situation that is presented before you. You may have a situation where you're forced to use a wide-angle lens simply because you can't get back far enough, or the scene itself means that you need to, you know, you can only take so many frames and you'll need a wide-angle lens. If that's the case, then overlap the images considerably. Don't, you know, start the next photograph where the next one finishes, or the previous one finishes, overlap by at least a third, you know, in each particular case, so that you're getting into the shot and you're not getting those edge distortions that wide-angle lenses have. I would suggest, if you can, use the you know, a medium-length, you know, wide-angle, say the equivalent in 35mm terms of a 35mm lens or a 50mm lens, so that, you know, you avoid as much distortion as possible. And in fact, one photographer was suggesting to me that you even shoot vertically, so that your camera is, you know,
right.
Yeah, and that of course is an interesting thing, because you have the greater amount of pixels on the long side. You know, if your camera is vertical, then you've got more pixels up and down than you would the other way around. So you're going to get a higher quality image, which of course is something that David is concerning himself with, simply because, you know, he wants to get high resolution panoramas. That could be a little more difficult because you're taking more photographs and we'll have to overlap more. So I haven't actually done that. I'm not going to say that I have. Interesting idea, though, because, of course, as I say, you've got more pixels across than you do down. And if you go vertical, well, you're going to get a higher quality image. Not only that, but you don't get the distortion at the edge of the frame that you have to stitch together with the next one. So it's an interesting idea. Always, I would suggest use a tripod. That, to me, is just a necessity. I've heard of people doing panoramas handheld, and I just don't think that's a good idea, but it can be done. The idea behind using a tripod is not only, of course, to, you know, for sharpness and stability, but it gives you the opportunity to do a trial run without taking photographs. You know, spin the camera on the tripod head and see how the horizon fits as you go along. So you'll find that if what you think is going to be level right throughout isn't, So, you know, you can do a trial run by spinning the camera to, you know, seeing where the horizon ends up, you know, differently from the first frame to the last frame, and you may find that your horizon is actually going to tilt considerably. So you have to adjust your camera, run through it again, and make sure that your horizon is straight in each, you know, image, and it ends up at the same level when you finish shooting one end than you did at the start. There are expensive tripod heads you can buy that spin on the nodal point of the lens so that your overlapping, you know, is much more accurate, but they're very expensive. I would just suggest that, you know, if it's not going to be something you're going to devote yourself to, a good ball head will give you, you know, all you need to work with, provided you've overlapped enough. And I do suggest you overlap about a third in each particular case. If you have foreground interest, take one photograph with that piece of foreground interest smack bang in the middle, and then work very carefully around that. It could be a rock or, you know, some log or whatever it might be in the foreground. Take one photograph where that piece of foreground interest is not involved in any of the overlapping, so that it, you know, when you're stitching together, there's no distortions that will take away from that piece of foreground interest. That is just a, you know, a suggestion to make sure that, you know, you don't have any issues stitching that particular thing together. Also, things that are closer sometimes tend to be a little bit more of a problem simply because of the nature of what you're doing. Then, of course, once you've got these images, and I would suggest you take, you know, what may end up actually being the equivalent of three images across may be the product of 6 to 7 different images that you've taken. And, you know, it's going to be a little bit time-consuming to do. So, you know, it's something that will take a little bit of practice. But take, you know, a fair few images. The more information you have, the more images you have, the smoother the transitions between, you know, one image to the next will be. So don't just, you know, take 3 or 4, take 5, 6, 7 of the same scene and work with them very, very closely. The software that you use, to be honest with you, I just use Photoshop Photo Merge as my starting point. Not all images stitch together that well, but Photo Merge, you know, just does a pretty good job, and you're working in Photoshop, which is a good thing, because that's where you might want to stay anyway, just in case the stitching doesn't quite match up, and that is just going to change from the nature of one image or one panoramic, you know, series of panoramas to another. So Photo Merge always works well, but to be honest with you, I've never done a panorama yet where I've just been able to sort of say to the software, hey, stitch this together, and it does. Usually you'll end up with a few layers, and you'll have to sort of just do a little bit of, you know, manual overlapping or a little bit of cloning heel tool to get the images to perfectly merge. But the good thing about Photoshop Photo Merge is that most people already have Photoshop installed in their computers, and it's probably, like I say, the software you're going to stay in to finish off the image, so you're already there. I hope this helps, David, because your question about going back to film, not that that's a bother to me. Film is fabulous stuff. It, like I've often said, it seems a little bit of a shame that just when we got to the zenith of, you know, quality in film, we suddenly decide to go digital and people scrap film. It's just stupid human nature. But to go out and buy a medium format, you know, camera and shoot, you know, 120 or 220 or 4x5 or 8x10 seems unnecessary, especially if you're going to do panorama work. A good friend of mine who writes for my magazine, Dan Paris, has has gone digital, but he's shot with the Fuji 6x17 panorama for a very long time. And the images he produces with film are just fabulous. But, you know, he's had to fork out $12,000 to get the camera. So, you know, and a lot of money on film. If this is, of course, how, you know, it's part of how he makes his living, by doing exhibition panoramic prints, and you know, his work is absolutely fabulous. But for you and me, you know, if it's not something we're going to devote ourselves to, you can actually do a beautiful panorama using your D70. And I'm going to actually send Bruce some images that I've put together. One of Machu Picchu, oh, cool, as a panorama. I did about 6 different images and stitched them all together to make a panorama of Machu Picchu. And another one that I did on Norfolk Island of some very large Moreton Bay figs. Now, that was a bit of a nightmare to stitch together, but it worked. And so I'm going to send you both of these. You can have a look at them and see that it's quite possible to do a beautiful panorama digitally without having to go and fork out all the money for, you know, getting a panorama camera or going back to film.
Fantastic. Oh, I look forward to seeing those shots.
I'll send them up as soon as I can so all our listeners can check it out. And look, you probably have better, you may have better examples if you're a panorama photographer. I'm not, you know, I've only done a few, but at least I know they've been successful.
Cool. All right. Thank you for that, Shelton.
My pleasure. No worries.
I'll catch up with you over the weekend.
You bet. I'm looking forward to having a coffee with you. It'll be good.
Definitely. Again, don't forget, if you're interested in Shelton's Argentina photo tour, you can check out the Shutters Inc. page. You'll find a PDF where you can fill it in and register for that tour in August.
Terrific. Yep. We're definitely going. It's all up and running. So look forward to having you coming along. Mm. And thank you. Thank you, too. Some of our listeners have sent very pleasant comments about my new website, photographybyshelton.com. You're welcome to have a look and see what I do. Yep. So just thought I'd let you know. But thank you very much for your kind comments.
Absolutely. Also, I would like to just give some advance warning that a couple of weeks from now, I'll be away for a week. I'm going to do a little bit of Good Samaritan work over in Vanuatu. I'm going to help a radio station called Radio Tanner, help them out with some digital audio editing equipment and whatnot and a bit of training and stuff.
And we do expect to see some photographs, Bruce.
Oh, absolutely. You can count on it. Apparently, Tanner is an island with an active volcano on it, so that should be interesting.
Oh, it's a beautiful place. You'll enjoy yourself. My wife and I had our 20th anniversary wedding celebrations there, so it's a beautiful place, Vanuatu. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I will. And again, just a quick plug for my Sennheiser CX300 earbuds, which I'm still absolutely loving and highly recommend to anybody who's interested in some noise-isolating earbuds for mobile use. They're absolutely fantastic.
Good on you.
All righty. We will talk with you next week, Shelton.
Look forward to it, Bruce. Thanks, mate.
See you later.
Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audiotou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
control D to bookmark.
Audiotou.com.